Cinefine. Roslyn Hyams.
The last cinephile of 2018 has a happy title with a less happy ending. Biopic, The Happy Prince, directed by and starring Rupert Everett, as legendary writer Oscar Wilde hits France. We the Coyotes, meanwhile, is a Franco-US film for today, a coming-of-age couple flick with howling good vibes.
Ça tourne. Cinephile, RFI's movie pick.
Then you think almost as highly of the play
as I do myself.
What is the name of this friend of yours?
Oscar.
Oscar Wilde.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I hear you're writing a new play.
Veteran composer Gabriel Yared's film music is deeply stormy and sad throughout the charming, deeply tinted and richly costumed The Happy Prince, which released in France this December after travelling around the world. Rupert Everett's film is about the latter years of Oscar Wilde's life in poverty, suffering and all sorts of abandon, but also love. Wilde loses his ties with his wife and two sons who flee England for Switzerland. He spent 2 years in jail with hard labour for gross indecency over his homosexual relationship with the young English nobleman's son, Alfred Douglas, known as Bosie, and is chronically in debt. Everett also embodies the well-loved writer. Oscar Wilde, well known for his satirical plays like The Importance of Being Earnest, his novels such as The Portrait of Dorian Gray and children's stories like The Happy Prince.
Constance, my dear, beautiful wife. You and my sons are the things that tie me to life.
Oscar, let's run away. Somewhere no one could find us.
You don't know what you're saying.
Not wearing your silk stockings today, Oscar.
You go too far, sir.
No, you go too far, madam.
I am a ruined man.
Oscar Wilde. The crime of which you have been convicted is so bad, you must be dead to all sense of shame.
It's Oscar bleeding.
Wilde's life ended in a small hotel room on the Parisian Left Bank at the end of November 1900. The film shows his closest and loyal friends at his side. Actor Colin Firth loyally plays Reggie Turner with an impressive handlebar moustache. Edwin Thomas plays the earnest Robbie Ross with a perfect measure of ambiguous love for Wilde. It's not the first film about legendary Irish writer Wilde, but it's the most moving, says Merlin Holland, Wilde's grandson and son of Vivian, and who is an expert on his grandfather's life and works. Merlin Holland, thank you very much for speaking to us today. You're the grandson of Oscar Wilde and Constance Wilde.
Indeed, yes.
Do you use both names?
No, never. My father never used both names. My grandmother changed the name once Oscar had been sentenced, and she left England to go and live, she hoped, temporarily in Switzerland, but then it became permanent, and she never came back to England. But because the scandal of Oscar's trial and imprisonment suddenly became international, it was reported in the New York Times a matter of days afterwards. She realized it wasn't going to go away, and to save herself and her sons any embarrassment they might have had on the continent, she adopted an old family name on her side. So that's the way it's remained ever since. I have thought occasionally about changing it back, but not for the last 18 years. I thought at the time of the centenary of his death I might. And when I said perhaps, it became probably, and probably became when to the journalists, so I stopped saying it.
You're Merlin Holland, all intents and purposes, and as a biographer and expert on Oscar Wilde, you've devoted many years to researching as well as drawing on the family history and what you must have learned from your father.
Well, I learned very little from my father at all. My father was only 8 and a half when he last saw his father. My mother was born 10 years later after Oscar's death, and I was born 45 years after Oscar's death myself. So we had no memories in common. You couldn't say, well, do you remember when Grandpa did this or that? And we weren't going to sit around discussing the latest biography or the latest film or whatever.
So you've had to do an awful lot of research then to write the books that you've written over the years about Oscar Wilde's life.
The books actually came out of something which was entirely coincidental. After the publication of Oscar's letters in 1962, the university world started to take him more seriously, not just a sort of cardboard cut-out funny man, but somebody who bridged a gap between the Victorian age and the modern age. And because the letters were still in copyright, my mother started getting requests for using long quotations out of the letters. And she didn't know what to do with it, so she went to a solicitor who charged her 15 quid and charged the academic who wanted to use the quotations 10. So she was losing all round. And I thought, well, I'd better take this on. But the embarrassment to me was that people were coming to me knowing far more about my grandfather than I did myself. So I made it a sort of duty, a pleasant duty, to know as much about him as I could so I could talk to them on their own wavelength. And out of this came two, three, I can't remember now how many books, about Oscar.
Your father actually is one of the important roles in the film, is a frame in a way in the film at the beginning and at the end, with his brother Cyril and your grandmother Constance. That puts the highlight on Oscar Wilde's relationship with children and with his children particularly.
It does. In that long letter he wrote from prison, which is a slightly sort of recriminatory, slightly justificatory, but in the end a strange sort of love letter to young Alfred Douglas, who was the cause, I say the cause, perhaps not the cause, but the catalyst for all this. He mentions his children and says how deeply saddened he is. He says, almost worse than going to prison is to be separated from one's children legally, as if one is some sort of monster who shouldn't have access to them. And I think it affected him very deeply. Indeed, when he was here in Paris, in the Hôtel d'Alsace, now L'Hôtel, he used to go and have lunch around the corner. And when my father's autobiography came out in France in the mid-1950s, somebody wrote to him saying, I was a little boy who used to lunch in the cafe and I saw your father. And as a result of a sort of minor accident on the table, he took me by the hand and gave me a kiss on both cheeks and said, which I didn't know at the time, in English, oh, my poor dear boys. And this man wrote to my father after his autobiography came out and said, it's taken 58 years, but I can pass on the two kisses your father gave to me for you.
You must have been very moved as well to see the film here, or be here for the release of the film The Happy Prince in France particularly.
Well, yes, it's a very moving film. I mean, it's moving in the sense that other films that have been made about Oscar either tend to take a quick gallop through his life, or there was one in the 60s which dealt almost entirely with the trials rather than just with the life. And I don't think, good though the previous one with Stephen Fry was, and it was a very good film. It was beautifully shot and Stephen did a grand job interpreting the role of Oscar. But I think what Rupert has managed to do in getting under the skin of the man over 25, 30 years of really immersing himself in the story is to bring out the whole emotional side of those terrible last years when he's not in total poverty, but he's pretty much alone and, of course, a complete pariah as far as the English are concerned. And that's what I find moving. And I find it's the same emotion that I've often felt when, having re-edited the complete letters in 2000 and having to read through what is effectively a third of his whole correspondence, which is these last years in Paris and Italy and so on. You know, occasionally I was sort of brought tears to my eyes to see the terrible state in which he finds himself, and tears of amusement too, because he kept that sense of humour, what the French call autodérision, self-deprecatory sort of humour. Smile, shrug your shoulders, move on, that's life. And then crack a joke. It's wonderful the way he's still able to do that right up to the last.
And the last, of course, was in November 1900 in Paris.
Indeed, 30th of November 1900.
The film is obviously a period film, what we would call a period film, but what is in the film about your grandfather's life is not necessarily restricted to that period. It's something that has a strong resonance today as well, talking about the way people were judged if they were homosexual and a general intolerance. It's important for this film as well, not just as a beautiful film.
Something that I felt after seeing it the first time round was that this, who am I to say it, but I shall anyway, I think it should be obligatory viewing for people between 18 and 25 who perhaps themselves are going through either the trauma of do I come out or don't I, as well as people who might have homophobic tendencies, to show them the terrible effect of what homophobia did to a brilliant man of letters 118 years ago. It is terribly sad. It's, as Rupert himself has said, you know, this doesn't go away, the homophobia, and there are countries now where it's, you know, punishable by death, which is absolutely appalling. But it does, I think it is a film which has an almost an educational value.
On the brighter, lighter side, of course, visually, it's a feast, this film.
Indeed, it is.
A lot of work gone into that, very interestingly. But it's also about ideals of love and friendship. And we learn a little bit more about Lord Alfred Douglas, Bosey, Oscar Wilde's lover, and also his very, very good friends, Reggie Turner, played
indeed,
by Colin Firth,
yes.
And Robbie Ross,
yes,
who's
yes.
played by Edwin Thomas.
Indeed, yes.
And they come across as really whole, very rounded characters as well. Were they, from the research that you've done, such important characters? What role, how much weight did they have in Oscar Wilde's life, in fact, as far as you know?
Well, Robbie Ross was supposed to have been Oscar's first homosexual love sometime in the late 1880s. In fact, when later charged with this or asked about it, Robbie says, well, it wasn't true, but he wouldn't have minded if it had been, which is rather nice. But I suspect that he probably was. And he remained a very, very true friend to Oscar throughout the rest of his life, occasionally deeply frustrated by Oscar's behaviour, and that comes out in the film too. One of Oscar's aphorisms, which always reminds me of the difference between Alfred Douglas and Robbie Ross, in his published aphorisms, he says, friendship is far more tragic than love. It lasts longer. And I think that probably sums up the relationship between Oscar and Robbie and Oscar and Bosey Douglas. Yes, they are rounded characters. I think Rupert has managed, as director, to bring that out in Edwin Thomas and Colin Firth. And they were very important in his life. There is a wonderful moment when Robbie is administering, after Constance Wilde, Oscar's wife, after her death, the small amount of money, the quarterly allowance which she'd granted him, carries on. And at one moment, Oscar writes to Robbie, because Robbie is administering this and sending it to him once a quarter, and Oscar writes to Robbie and says, do you think you could let me have my allowance a little bit early? There's an innkeeper in Nogent who is holding my suitcases hostage until I pay him. Robbie's reply to that hasn't survived, but Oscar's reply to Robbie has, and it says, dear Robbie, I'm so sorry that I used the excuse of Nogent. I'd quite forgotten that I'd used it before. It distresses me and shows a total collapse of my imagination. See, there again is the jest in adverse circumstances. But that was Robbie. Robbie was the voice of reason. And although I think Oscar was equally infuriated by Robbie at times, dear infuriating little Robbie, one letter starts, he was the rock, basically, in Oscar's life. And, of course, after Oscar's death, set about his rehabilitation, befriended my father, who looked upon him as almost as a surrogate father. Robbie died in 1918, in part because he'd been hounded by Lord Alfred Douglas. As Alfred Douglas by that stage had renounced homosexuality, if one ever does, but he had, and he couldn't bear the thought that Robbie was doing the rehabilitation of Oscar Wilde. You know, I was Oscar Wilde's lover and friend, you know, who are you to rehabilitate the man? So he hounded Robbie because of Robbie's homosexuality, and I think that probably brought about Robbie's early death at the age of, what was it, 49, I think.
Just 3 years older than Oscar Wilde, who died at 46. So how much input did you have in the film? Were you actually involved in the research?
No, I wasn't. I certainly wasn't at the shooting of the film. I was, Rupert and I met almost by accident when Oscar's tomb in Père Lachaise was cleaned and protected. And I needed a counterbalance to the Minister of Culture from Ireland, who'd come over specially, managed to get in touch with Rupert, who came and made a speech at the grave. He was almost in despair about getting his film off the ground, and he said to me later he regarded this as a sort of sign, and we remained friends ever since. And he sent me the scenario and asked, with some trepidation, he said, and asked for my comments, which I gave him. And then there were emails occasionally saying, for details, you know, what was it like? Can you tell me something about the prison conditions of the time? Or very specific questions, which I was able to answer. I wasn't a sort of intimate collaborator on the film, but I was there in the background for anything that he suddenly wanted to know about, and I was happy to do it.
You obviously know your grandfather's works, Oscar Wilde's works, inside out. Is The Happy Prince one of your favourites?
Yes, I suppose it's one of everybody's favourites. But I've recently done a preface to a deluxe edition of the fairy stories coming out in America. And the one thing, discussing it with them, that has been quite clear to me is that although these are called children's stories, they have a very modern ring to them. I mean, if you think about children's authors today who allow the grown-ups who are reading to have a little laugh on the side, which the children may not get. You know, the children who go in front of the Happy Prince and say, he looks like an angel. How do you know, says the mathematical master, you've never seen one? Oh, yes, we have, say the children, in our dreams. So it's a sort of dig at authority. So there's something for everyone. As he said, they're not just stories for children, they're stories from everyone from 18 to 80.
Merlin Holland, thank you very much for speaking to us today.
I love him as I always did, with a sense of tragedy and ruin. There's no mystery so great as suffering. But suffering is nothing when there is love. Love is everything. I'm in mortal combat with this wallpaper, Robbie. One of us has to go.
Take two. Ça tourne. Cinéphile, up and coming.
We the Coyotes was one of the lucky young films at the Acid section at the Cannes Film Festival in 2018. Acid is the independent distributor's choice.
I love LA, but it's such a long way.
Do you think that we could stay at your place for a few days?
No, the thing is, man, I'm kind of living in my car right now.
I just moved here and I'm looking for a job.
I mean, all we can offer you is an unpaid internship.
I can't afford to work for free.
I followed you all the way out here, quit my job for you.
We came out here together. I don't know, I can't do this alone. I love
LA. Two enterprising French people infused with love of cinema hit the road or the skies and took off for Los Angeles a few years ago, Hannah Ladoul and Marco Lavia. We the Coyotes is their first feature. Months after their first screening in May, they were still oozing with enthusiasm when I met them in a cafe in Paris at the end of the year. They were eager to talk about the LA scene and their loosely autobiographical picture, starring Morgan Saylor as Amanda and McCall Lombardi as Jake. He really wows. They arrive in the city from the east coast of the US, have made sacrifices and meet all sorts of challenges and disappointments. They take us around the unglamorous parts of town where unrich and unfamous people dwell in the City of Angels.
Yeah, so there's a lot of part that is autobiographical in the film. And it's based on our experience, but the characters are completely like fictional. It's not us, but like a lot of situations that the characters are facing during the film happened to us when we moved and when we, yeah, the last 5 years.
And these are situations that happen to many people when they move to a new city and they're trying to get into adult life.
Trying to find a job, trying to stay in love.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And but also something that's very different from the reality is we decided to put all of these situations into one single day because we were interested in seeing how would the characters react with all of these stuff happening in a very short period of time. So there's a real sense of urgency in the film.
It's a film that takes place in Los Angeles. There's a bit of a Franco-American film community starting up. Do you feel like you're part of a movement?
I don't know, but we're happy to make films in L.A. It feels like there is a lot of energy and optimism over there. So,
yeah, what we moved to L.A. to be part of the American indie film community, and I think that maybe it's getting closer because, for example, Vanishing Angle, the production company that helped us make this film, they also produced Thunder Roads, that was in theaters in France and that was at Acid as well. So I think a lot of American indies are exporting very well to France because people here are more cinephile maybe than Americans. So I don't know. I mean, it's great to make films over there, and then it's even greater when they come to France and they're released in theaters.
The two actors in the film, it's largely just those two actors. So Morgan Saylor is well known in the States, and McCall Lombardi actually has been in films that have been in the Cannes Zen, has worked a lot with Sean Baker.
Yeah, he was a Patty Cakes, and he was also in Andrea Arnold American Honey. They really loved the script because I think they really related to the script a lot. Yeah, it's funny because the actors are very adept of Actors Studio. And it's funny because like Morgan, she had to move before we started shooting, so she gave a plane ticket to McCall, and they did the real road trip together from Chicago to Los Angeles. So they stayed like 5 days in this truck to move her place.
So that's where they built their characters.
Exactly. So when they came back from this trip, they were like calling themselves like a Jake and Amanda, and not Morgan and McCall anymore.
As much as it's about Los Angeles, what you've seen in Los Angeles, growing up, coming of age, all those things, love stories, it's also about overcoming prejudice, isn't it? And looking at people in a different way, not judging literally a book by its cover. And the books are actually important in the film. Don't want to give too much away.
Amanda and Jake are moving, and they're from very different backgrounds because we wanted to we wanted there to be a clash between two Americas. Amanda's family is like upper middle class, and they don't approve of her relationship with Jake, who's, we understand, from a lower social class. And it's about Amanda and Jake deciding what they want to do. And
Yeah, really. It's really a story about like making choices. And during this day, they will make like a lot of choices that can change their life forever.
We wish you all the very best with this film.
Thank you so much. Thank you, yeah.
Thank you for having us.
It's getting released on the December 12th in France and beginning of February in the US.
Well, that just about wraps up this December's Cinephile. Coming up at the end of January 2019 in Cinephile number 22, Another Day of Life, a docudrama revisits the Angolan Civil War in the 1970s based on the work of late Polish war reporter Richard Kapuscinski, and Les Invisibles, The Invisibles, a French soft drama about homeless women and trying to help them move on. Until then, I wish all our listeners and readers a very good 2019 from me, Roslyn Hyams. Goodbye. On est pas bien là? Hein?